This tape begins about 20 seconds into the tape. Sorry for the cutoff in remastering the tape. We missed about 20 seconds. So at this point, you have probably about 15 to go. But stay tuned. It'll come on.
Yes and no. The Israelites are trying to get their leadership over here to their homeland in the United States under the assumption that nobody's going to bomb the United States and they are going to absolutely wipe out Israel. Now, that's what's going to happen. And they can really be persecuted then. But all the important ones that they wanted to survive, they're just going to get rid of the population over there and base all their next wars and so forth. But they think they're pretty safe as far away as the United States is from Iraq and Egypt. Well, you're not safe here. So it's going to be fun. Where are we, Jay?
Just about the end of this one.
Well, I think when we get through with that one, we'll leave the conclusion and move to the last one.
Yiddish and so forth?
Yes.
Okay. The last sentence was, this lifts the Jews in Poland completely out of Polish obligation. All they will have to do is to complain to the League of Nations, and international jury will do the rest. The United States was a party toward the writing of these stipulations into treaty. The American people are not yet a party to their enforcement. There are 250,000 of these Jews coming to the United States from Poland. You have read their demands in Poland. You have read their achievements in the peace conference. Do you say, as an American citizen, that you are ready to take for the United States the dose of Jewish medicine which the peace conference gave to Poland? Do you say, in view of what has been said about the whole situation, that the Jews are showing anything besides a wicked and gloating spirit of revenge in the way they have propagandized against Poland after humiliating her in the peace conference? Readers, this is one of the most important articles for background information on this group of people which you will ever find. I forgot to read end of quoting. So this is the commander talking. I will try to work in a discussion on these topics at a meeting of some sort, because you don't watch closely. If you don't watch closely, you will miss what has happened to already enslave America to this world order. Salute. This writing is also from Sunday, March the 22nd, 1998. It is called Part 46 of Global Parasites. And the quoting is from Facts Are Facts. Yiddish and other false stuff. When the Khazars in the 1st century B.C. invaded Eastern Europe, their mother tongue was an Asiatic language, referred to in the Jewish Encyclopedia as the Khazar languages. Hatton says, perhaps the most important one thing to get from this paragraph is the recognition in the Jewish Encyclopedia of these facts as presented. They were primitive Asiatic dialects without any alphabet or any written form. When King Bulan was converted in the 7th century, he decreed that the Hebrew characters he saw in the Talmud and other Hebrew documents was therefore to become the alphabet of the Khazar language. The Hebrew language, in order to provide a means for providing a written record of their speech. The adoption of the Hebrew characters had no racial, political, or religious implication. The Western European uncivilized nations, which had no alphabet for their spoken language, adopted the alphabet of Latin language under comparable circumstances. With the culture of the Romans was introduced into these, with it, the culture of the Romans was introduced into these uncivilized areas. Thus, the Latin alphabet was adopted for the language of the French, Spanish, English, Swedish, and many other Western European languages. These languages were completely foreign to each other, yet they all used the same alphabet. the Romans brought their alphabet with their culture to these uncivilized nations, exactly like the rabbis brought the Hebrew alphabet from Babylonia to the Khazars when they introduced writing to them in the form of the Talmud's alphabet. Since the conquest of the Khazars by the Russians and the disappearance of the Khazar kingdom, the language of the Khazars is known as Yiddish. For about six centuries, the so-called or self-styled Jews of Eastern Europe have referred to themselves, while still resident in their native Eastern European countries, as Yiddish by nationality. Hatton's comment, perhaps that is how we should refer to these people. But you can see that the Jews would have just as much objection and claim persecution. They identified themselves as Yiddish rather than as Russian, Polish, Galatian, Lithuanian, Romanian, Hungarian, or by the nation of which they were citizens. They also referred to the common language they all spoke as Yiddish. There are today, October 1954, in New York City, as you know, my dear Dr. Goldstein, as many Yiddish newspapers, Yiddish self-styled Jews from Eastern Europe, which are identified publicly by the word Yiddish in their title. Hatton says, note please that this is now after World War II and the big influx of Jews to make up for the missing Jews from Europe that were assumed to be killed in that nasty old Holocaust. Understand, please, that when everything is secret and only the guilty are keeping the books, you can't tell, can you? Also note, please, that the language called Yiddish is now such a part of your English language as to have phonetically words such as chutzpah written as a part of your central computer dictionaries, of course, using the English language. Therefore, we must certainly accept the fact that these Yiddish Talmudists knew what they were doing to fool all of the people all of the time, especially the Hebrews. Before it became known as the Yiddish language, the mother tongue of the Khazars added many words to its limited ancient vocabulary as necessity required. Their words were acquired from the languages of neighboring nations with whom they had political, social, or economic relations. Languages of all nations add to their vocabularies in the same way. The Khazars adapted words to their requirements from the German, the Slavonic, and the Baltic languages. The Khazars adopted a great number of words from the German language. The Germans had a much more advanced civilization than their Khazar neighbors, and the Khazars sent their children to German schools and universities. Hatton says, I must not hear, however...
I think it probably should be note.
I must note here, however, that some 300 years after the birth of Jesus Christ, that it was the same scholars who built the New Testament and added it to the Old Testament as if it were the gospel truth. Pun intended. The Yiddish language is not a German dialect. Many people are led to believe so because Yiddish has borrowed so many words from the German language. If Yiddish is a German dialect acquired from the Germans, then what language did the Khazars speak for the 1,000 years they existed in Eastern Europe before they acquired culture from the Germans? The Khazars must have spoken some language when they invaded Eastern Europe. What was that language? When did they discard it? How did the entire Khazar population discard one language and adopt another? All of a sudden, the idea is too absurd to discuss. Yiddish is the modern name for the ancient mother tongue of the Khazars, with added German, Slavonic, and Baltic adopted and adapted numerous words. Yiddish must not be confused with Hebrew because they both use the same characters as their alphabets. There is not one word of Yiddish in ancient Hebrew, nor is there one word of ancient Hebrew in Yiddish. As I stated before, they are as totally different as Swedish and Spanish, which both likewise use the same Latin characters for their alphabets. The Yiddish language is the cultural common denominator for the so-called or self-styled Jews in or from Eastern Europe. To the so-called or self-styled Jews in and from Eastern Europe, Yiddish serves them like the English language serves the populations of the 48 states of the United States. Their cultural common denominator throughout the 48 states is the English language, or wherever they may immigrate and resettle. The English language is the tie which binds them to each other. It is the same with the Yiddish language and so-called or self-styled Jews throughout the world. Yiddish serves another very useful purpose for so-called or self-styled Jews throughout the world, they possess in Yiddish what no other national, racial, or religious group can claim. Approximately 90% of the world's so-called or self-styled Jews living in 42 different countries of the world today are either immigrants from Eastern Europe or their parents immigrated from Eastern Europe. Yiddish is a language common to all of them as their first or second language according to where they were born. It is an international language to them. Regardless of what country in the world they may settle, they will always find co-religionists who also speak Yiddish. Yiddish enjoys other international advantages too obvious to describe here. Yiddish is the modern language of a nation which has lost its existence as a nation. Yiddish never had a religious implication, although using Hebrew characters for its alphabet. It must not be confused with words like Jewish, but it is very much. So, from where did they come? Directly north of the Khazar kingdom at the height of its power. Aton says prior to the takeover of America. A small Slavic state was organized in 820 AD on the south shore of the Gulf of Finland, where it flows into the Baltic Sea. This small state was organized by a small group of Varangians from the...
Does that hit anybody? Does it remind you of anything? Beringas.
What?
Always. No, when they start doing their writing, they know exactly what they're doing. Ferengis. In Star Trek, you have the Ferengis, and they are the commercial, absolutely have no moral codes at all. They're the ones with the big ears. It's a small world, isn't it?
Commander?
Yes.
Aside, while you're on this business of,
in the writings from Saturday, there was mention made of Benjamin Disraeli and his great character in the book Coningsby, and this character's name is Sidonia. And for all of you who have been monitoring, I put a note in the paper for those who aren't aware, but for all of you who have been following all the hoopla on the most active region of Mars, it is the area called Cydonia. And if one wonders where that name may come from and what an interesting thing that would be to trace who named that in NASA and how that came to be, I have a feeling there's a hell of a story there.
There are so many stories that I'm sick of dealing with this one.
The native population of this newly formed state consisted of nomad slaves who had made their home in this area from earliest recorded history. This infant nation was even smaller than our state of Delaware. This newly born state, however, was the embryo which developed into the great Russian Empire. In less than 1,000 years, since 820 A.D., this synthetic nation expanded its borders by ceaseless conquest until it now includes more than 9,500,000 square miles in Europe and Asia, or more than three times the area of continental United States, and they have not stopped. During the 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th centuries, the rapidly expanding Russian nation gradually swallowed up the Khazar kingdom, its neighbor directly to the south. The conquest of the Khazar kingdom by the Russians supplies history with the explanation for the presence, after the 13th century, of the large number of so-called or self-styled Jews in Russia. The large number of so-called or self-styled Jews in Russia and in Eastern Europe after the destruction of the Khazar kingdom were thereafter no longer known as Khazars, but as the Yiddish populations of these many countries. They so refer to themselves today. In the many wars with her neighbors in Europe after the 13th century, Russia was required to cede to her victors large areas which were originally part of the Khazar kingdom. In this manner, Poland, Lithuania, Galicia, Hungary, Romania, and Austria acquired from Russia territory originally a part of the Khazar kingdom. Together with this territory, these nations acquired a segment of the population of so-called or self-styled Jews descended from the Khazars who once occupied the territory. These frequent boundary changes by the nations in Eastern Europe explains the presence today of so-called or self-styled Jews in all of these countries who all trace their ancestry back to the converted Khazars. Their common language, their common culture, their common religion, and their common racial characteristics classify them all beyond any question of doubt with the Khazars who invaded Eastern Europe in the 1st century B.C. and who were converted to Talmudism in the 7th century. The so-called or self-styled Jews throughout the world today of Eastern European origin make up at least 90% of the world's total present population of so-called or self-styled Jews. The conversion of King Bulan and the Khazar nation in the 7th century accomplished for Talmudism, or for Judaism, as Talmudism is called today, what the conversion of Constantine and Western European nations accomplished for Christianity. Christianity was a small, comparatively unimportant religious belief, practiced principally in the Eastern Mediterranean area, until a conversion to the Christian faith of the large populations of the Western European pagan nations under the conversion of Constantine. Talmudism, or Judaism, as Talmudism is known today, was given its greatest stimulus in all its history with the conversion of the large pagan Khazar population in the 7th century. Without the conversion of the Khazar population, it is doubtful if Talmudism or Judaism, as Talmudism is known today, could have survived.
See, it goes right along with what's happened. We're going to just begin to inch our way into your tent. And all the while, they have been responsible for the Crusades, the Inquisitions. They have written your Bibles for you. They have given you their prophecy. And then they come over to the United States, for instance, and while you're not looking, you suddenly don't hate the Jews anymore. You realize you're one of them, and therefore we become Judeo-Christians. You have ceased to be anything resembling Christian, nor do you resemble anything Judean. You have become victims of the Talmud, which was written by some learned elders of Zion, some men who wanted to control everything. And look how smoothly it flowed. But our history comes out of the Old Testament. Your what comes from where? You are going to blame God for that ungodly book called the Old Testament? The new one's bad enough, but the old one is filled to overflow with torture and murder and rape. Everything wicked and evil you can come up with. And because you will not have gotten the paper yet, and a lot of you will not have read it, we wrote on this very topic. God does not go about killing. And the one, Mr. Moore, he has a very, M-O-H-R, has a very large Christian fundamentalist evangelical following. And what do they quote? And what have I seen quoted so many times lately that I want to barf? God said to his chosen people, you go over there and you kill every man, woman, child, and suckling. Get rid of all of them, or you'll live to regret it because they'll haunt you the rest of your life. Now, do you really think God, Creator, would tell anybody to go kill everybody he's just created? Well, they tried. They really tried. But, you know, some of them slipped away, which I'm sure they've lived to regret. It goes back a long time. It goes all the way back to the beginning, doesn't it? And you just didn't know who God's enemy was. and the preachers get up and they interpret, and you get lost in the rituals of a church organization and a doctrine, you can't even get along there. The Baptists over here, the Lutherans over here, and the funny thing is, the closest you ever got to telling the truth were the Jesuits. They knew they had usurped Jesus, and they just smugly went right on about rubbing it in your face. And all you have to do is show a bunch of people the human aspects of hanging a man on the cross, letting him bleed and die and whatever, torturing him, and suddenly, oh, it's through his blood, through his very flesh. These are satanic terms, people. You are saved. You don't even have to do good. All you have to do is believe on him. Listen to them, what they tell you. Believe on him. Believe on him until you can't even think one without the other. Who should I believe? Well, Jesus. All you've got to do is say, I thought Paul named Jesus after, I thought his name was Emmanuel. Well, it was. Well, how do you justify saying in your newer translations of the Bible that he was born and he was named Jesus? Because he wasn't. And how does it happen that you have put his birthday in the middle of December on a Jewish holiday? Well, Jews are okay. I mean, Judeo... No, sir. These are the evil monsters of history. These were the old pagan idolaters and Pharisees. And they already had the holiday, my friends. So they made it a commercial holiday to fit with their program. The same with Easter. And now all you have are little bunnies running around. And the Jews come back with this one. We don't want a Christmas tree on public property. Say what? The Christmas tree is their symbol. And then look at what happened. This Christmas. This Christmas holiday, we want equal rights. So they put up a menorah that is bigger than the White House on the White House lawn. Fine. What did they do to the Islamic symbol? They vandalized it and put swastikas on it. So I guess just some people are more equal than others. This is a real interesting piece of history, people. Oh, know what your history is, because you are staking your eternal life on it and your physical life. They're going to start major depopulizing. Let me handle that one after you finish this. Go ahead. Don't let me pass that one. You are in for some really bad times. This flesh-eating stuff is out of control. Out of control already.
Now, we've got less than a page to go.
I hear you.
Talmudism, the civil and religious code of the Pharisees, most likely would have passed out of existence like the many other creeds and cults practiced by the peoples of the area before, during, and after Pharisaism assumed its prominent position among these creeds and cults in the time of Jesus. Talmudism, as Pharisaism was called later, would have disappeared with all of its contemporary creeds and cults, but for the conversion of the Khazars to Talmudism in the 7th century. At that time, Talmudism was well on its way towards complete oblivion. But what about Christianity? In the year 986 A.D., the ruler of Russia, Vladimir III, became a convert to the Christian faith in order to marry a Catholic Slavonic princess of a neighboring sovereign state.
Boy, I bet he paid for that one.
The marriage was otherwise impossible. Vladimir III thereupon also made his newly acquired Christian faith the state religion of Russia, replacing the pagan worship formerly practiced in Russia since it was founded in 820 AD. Vladimir Threehan and his successors as the rulers of Russia attempted in vain to convert the so-called or self-styled Jews, now Russian subjects, to Russia's Christian state religion and to adopt the customs and culture of the numerically predominant Russian Christian population. The so-called or self-styled Jews in Russia refused and resisted this plan vigorously. They refused to adopt the Russian alphabet in place of the Hebrew characters used in writing their Yiddish language. They resisted this plan vigorously. They refused to adopt the Russian alphabet in place of the Hebrew characters used in writing their Yiddish language. They opposed every attempt to bring about the complete assimilation of the former sovereign Khazar nation into the Russian nation. They resisted with every means at their disposal. The many forms of tension which resulted produced situations described by history as massacres, pogroms, persecution, discrimination, etc. End of quoting. The final comment was from Commander is that there is more I wish to cover, but I can't. It can wait for another day. We are short of time, Norma, so let us abruptly draw this to a close.
When she's through coughing and so forth, we'll talk about health. They're going to start in a major, major way, striking little pods around. All of these are trial balloons, you have to understand. And they're going to be very selective about who is hit. It's going to be almost like managing El Nino. There's nothing even remotely interesting about El Nino. It is just that when you have these climactic changes, you can do so much with those storms. You can just move them like around on a chessboard. And you've got many, many players involved. The Russians, and we've written about this at great length, and I believe Coleman's come out with something, only I believe he misspeaks. It has been known for a long, long time that many of the early shuttle program launches and things were lies. And now they're even getting around to telling you about water on the moon. I thought they went to the moon. But they didn't, did they? And whatever they sent out there was not welcome out there. And I can tell you, really, they were not welcome out there. So you have all sorts of crazy things taking place. But one fact out of it is that the Russians do have superiority in space called cosmospheres. It isn't so much that their technology is so great, it's that they got there first with the most. And now you're going to have to face the fact that China is ready to move into the nuclear age and the satellite and space age.